This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutan with me, Kusu Chuang and Joyce Go. The morning,
good morning.
Rhyme.
Good morning. Good morning.
So, it's the start of a new week.
It is.
And the start of a new day.
And hopefully the start of a new dawn this week, Wednesday.
That's right. So what's happening on Wednesday, of course, you needn't be reminded, but it is, in fact, GE14, polling day, D-Day, as it were. It was P-Day, polling. But
Did you say about 14th time lucky? 13th time lucky?
No, I think it's third time lucky, but never mind.
Oh, is that right?
I
just mangled the idiom.
Well, I think regardless of which side you're supporting, the important thing is that you get it right. And so there's a lot of information out there about what to do in order to prepare for polling day. Remember, you have to have your IC with you. Remember, it really is worth checking that Election Commission website for all the details and print it out. Print out those details. Print out that page, in fact. That seems to be a wise thing to do. And are you both voting in this election?
Yes,
absolutely.
Oh, certainly.
Yes.
Okay. And, of course, many people have been catching the rounds of charama and sessions that have been organized by all sides. And there's, I think, three main coalitions. And in some seats, there up to five or six contenders, depending. It's a bewildering field. But I guess if you cut out the noise, you'll know exactly what you want.
Yeah. Hey, look, I mean, isn't just Malaysia with such a fragmented, it's for 32 million, for 31 million population with so many candidates, are we, exclusive in this club? Do other countries have this myriad number of choices?
Well, I think it really depends on the system, right? So you have, depending on the country you go to, complex systems, and they include, if you have proportional representation, but you have some sort of list system and you have multiple houses to choose from. And so, it can get quite complicated in some countries. Malaysia actually, with the first past the post system, is, I think, reasonably easy. It's just that the choice, there are multiple choices.
I guess what's quite unique to Malaysia is the dramas. And basically, when you go down to the ground and you listen and you hear all the whole...
I've been to a few
view.
Of them, and look, I mean, at the end of the day, they don't actually offer much by way of policy. It's just to get your heart beating, isn't it?
Right. There's nothing wrong with that, right? So it's about mobilizing interests and passions.
If you're already attending a trauma of one or the other, then you're already in that direction, right? I mean...
People are going... there are some that you can go to both parties. You can go around just to Kepo and check it out.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of curiosity as well. I mean, Joyce is absolutely correct.
Well, I agree, but I wanted something more substantive. Didn't get it.
Okay, we'll be back with a look at grave humor. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Lou Reed with Vicious. I'm Sharad Kutan with me, Kusu Chuang and Joyce Go. And the morning run continues. We're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock in the morning with a range of interviews, news and analysis. It is the 7th of May, 2 days before polling day. Now, we have some breaking news here about developments in Italy. Remember, Italy went to the polls some 2 months ago. They have yet to form a government, and that's because some of the main contenders in that race kind of neck and neck. So it really has resulted in a situation where the two biggest parties have to come together, the Northern League and the Five Star Movement have to come together and make a decision about how they pass out government and positions.
The classic hung parliament syndrome, right?
Yeah, and they haven't found this. Yeah. 2 months and they're yet to find a resolution that satisfies both sides. So apparently in this story, the Five Star Movement has made a so-called last-ditch offer to the far-right Northern League in order to break the deadlock. See, that's something we don't have or haven't had in the past in Malaysia.
Well,
it's one of the scenarios that people are anticipating,
exactly.
Aren't they?
You might get exactly what you wished for, but not exactly in the same form. And a hung parliament. And actually for business, actually one of the worst things, because you don't get clear policy direction. Mm. Both sides are hankering for supremacy, and they don't get it.
Yeah, and that's certainly one of the possibilities coming out of this. Well, you know, we'll keep you updated on that Italian situation. In fact, I did do a grill with the Italian ambassador. If you want to know some of the dynamics and why there are difficulties in that Italian scenario, because, and I could say very briefly, it's got to do with very different problems that each of the parties represent. One, the industrialized north, the poorer south.
You know,
it's a huge, huge divide there. So how do they bridge that divide? Well, it's up to Italians, I guess, to make a decision at some point. Okay, coming back to, Malaysia, we have many stories coming out, not the news flow around the elections. One of that has to do with a recent attempt by Dr. Mahathir, who heads the Federal Oppositional Coalition, to visit the graves of former past president, the late Fazil Noor in Kedah, and also the late past spiritual leader and Menteri Besar of Kelantan, Abdul Aziz Nik Mat.
Yeah, so there's news coming up from that, and past Central Committee member Mokhtar Senik has told Pakatan Harapan chairperson Dr. Mahathir Mohamad to visit his own grave. So basically, I mean, all the comments that are coming out.
Ayo, we're talking about bad taste, right? Facebook. Facebook is now the new platform du jour, right, for posting your comments, your opinions. I just want to say, I mean, everybody's making fun of the good doctor's age. And his longevity, I think, is the right word to say it, right?
Yeah, it's not just age, it's his political longevity. And yeah. I think there's a bit of trepidation. Those who make fun of it, who say he's irrelevant, remember just maybe 2 months ago or 3 months ago when he was really just starting out, you know, and he threw the gauntlet down, there were attempts to kind of like dismiss him. Now there's quite a bit of fear about what he's actually brought to the table and who he's pulling along with him.
Yeah, I mean, just on the terms of political longevity, I remember, I think I was about 15 or 16 when I read The Malay Dilemma, and that was a long time ago.
Well, you're a very precocious young man.
I was.
16, The Malay Dilemma. Yeah, yeah. Very important book to read.
It's actually a simple book to read at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's very straightforward.
A thin book, it's about 120 pages or something.
Ooh, today young people can't get through 2 4-to-7 pages of text without, be revolting. It's true. I've taught before. Yeah, oh my goodness, it's an article. You mean we had to read one of these things more than once a week? Oh, sorry, I'm just kind of mimicking some of my students there. No, actually, my students were really quite sweet. No, they were lazy. Okay, moving on. Now, the question really is that there's quite a bit of humor as well around it. So some of...
graveyard humor, might I add.
Yeah. So what do you make of it, Joyce?
Well, I find it a bit of bad taste because, it's just... I guess the blows will come. They will definitely hit out. But, to what extent and to... Where's the line? Basically, if you look at Dr. M, he's going around and he's basically a lot of strength and a lot of energy coming from a 90-something-year-old man. I was talking to my husband over a week, and you see he was in Malacca, he was in KL, and then he went to Kelantan.
Yeah, they feel very strong, huh?
Yeah.
But
basically,
that amount of traveling, you've got to be pretty, robust.
Yeah. So the question is, and maybe this is a bit of a segue from the graveyard humor, which is the question of our exposure to older people who are energetic. And many of us, and I'm gathering from the comments I hear, is that they haven't encountered people in their 80s or 90s who are energetic. I, on the other hand, seem to be surrounded by older people who are very energetic, sometimes much more energetic than I am. And so even yesterday when I went to a charama, I was with two people who are in their mid to late 80s, strode there. We walked together to charama and they walked back, and...
So what's the secret?
Yeah, that is something that...
I saw this video last night from Business Insider. Social integration is one. Obviously.
Not overeating, I think.
Not overeating is another.
Okay.
Cutting away the booze is another.
Yeah, but, everything in moderation. Like that. That's what
everything
my mother says. Yeah. My mother's in the early 80s.
One, two glasses of wine, I think, okay. Like, 1-2 glasses of red wine, fine.
So, Chuang, at the ripe old age of 48, is giving...
47, not
47,
yet.
47,
not,
oh,
not,
right.
Not, 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 not yet.
You're already giving advice on longevity. I don't think anybody's going to take it from you.
I'm the last person.
Yeah, you need to wait at least 40 years before you can start dishing that one out. Okay, we're going to be looking at cardboard cutouts and their power next. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Morrissey with Suede Head. I'm Shuad Kudri with me, Joyce Goh and Kusu Chuang. And the morning run continues. Remember, you can always be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. That's 018-789-8899. If you want to remain anonymous, don't put your name there. But if you don't, if you want us to give you a bit of a shout out, then please put your name along with your comments. Now, a lot has been said about the cutouts, including, I think, a story that appeared on Malaysia Kini about BFM's little graphic that included a cutout of the former Prime Minister, Tun Dr. Mahathir.
Yeah, so this is a little exercise in self-promotion. Not really, but
why not?
I thought it was actually quite good because I saw that actually from the station last night.
Let's describe it.
Yeah.
So it's a little promotional thing that says who's going to be the next Prime Minister.
Yeah.
It has the caretaker Prime Minister, Najib Razak, there. And then it has somebody, but his face has been cut out.
Just like most of the billboards in the country. A very puerile gesture, might I add, but it is happening all around the country. I've been getting lots of WhatsApp videos about that, actually.
Yeah, I quite like Malaysia Kini's title for that article. It goes, Behold Faceless Mahathir. So it has the BFM acronym. They're really, really quite funny.
Okay, so the question is this just ineffective, or in fact, have those people who have, pushed this cut out and, well, basically have made the billboards conform to the bylaws, as it were, coming into this general election, have they in fact created a much more powerful statement?
That's right.
Inadvertently.
That's right.
Now, Jo Kukadas, who's a well-known actor and a theatre practitioner, she's come out to try to explain what this new power is. And she says in her Facebook posting, because the more you cut out these faces, the more powerful they become. We spoke to her and she tells us more about what she means by this.
Yeah, I think there are two things that I was thinking about when I saw those images being defaced. And it made me think about how powerful then those images became because something is forced to be removed. Because when something like that is forced to be removed, then your imagination rushes in to fill that particular void. You ask yourself, well, what was there before? Why was it removed? And then we begin to think in a slightly larger way. We begin to think in metaphors. We begin to think in symbols. And this is what I think is very powerful when we see these empty spaces, because we want to know what was there before. I mean, of course, I work in theatre, so the stage is an empty space. And when we look at that empty space, what we're waiting for is we're waiting for something to walk across it. And when we have this void, then we begin to invest it with meaning. And then our imagination actually gets fired up, and then we get involved. It's very easy to be uninvolved with things that are familiar. But as soon as something is shifted, and as soon as they cut out the thing, suddenly you feel involved because your imagination begins to take part. And that, I think, is the power of emptiness. As a Malaysian, and with the idea of Wayang Kulit, very powerfully Wayang Kulit, the shadow is always created by the puppet. But what creates the shadow is what is cut out of the puppet. So it's within the body of the puppet you have areas which are cut out. And through those areas, the light shines through and creates the shadow. And the shadow is what also fires up our imagination. We begin to imagine, well, what is that we see? So it's not the flat surface that inspires us. It's the spaces in between that actually create shadow, that create doubt, that create questions, that create space for our imagination.
That was Jo Kukadas, a well-known actor and director. She very well known for her, for the creation of the Instant Cafe Theatre, and also, one of her many characters was the YB. If you remember YB, who wore a bush jacket and weighed in on all kinds of matters.
Yeah, I think she has a good point when it comes to what Jo is saying, that basically with the cutouts, it there's a the empty space, you see the light shining through, it draws attention. And I also feel that when you see that whole empty space in the middle of the faces, you're wondering, who was there? And then it just basically sparks. It makes you think, and it just basically it draws more attention. It's everyone's talking about it. It's creating more
of a buzz. But,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's no more surefire way to drive, you know, popularity or sales than to make something illegal or censored or to make it, you know, the forbidden fruit. Then it suddenly becomes intoxicating and mysterious, right?
Yeah, in fact, there's an expression, right? The forbidden fruit tastes sweetest.
Much sweeter, right? Yeah. And, you know, and that's the irony, which is something that the establishment didn't want to achieved in much greater quantums. And it's quite delicious, actually, if you ask me.
I mean, the idea of the imagination is something that perhaps people don't associate with politics. They think of politics as a pretty straight game. Somebody says something or promises something or gives you something, and you make those judgments. But actually, there's a lot of theater in politics, and we are always reading subtle signs as well. We're reading between the lines. We are looking at a body, you know, the way people comport themselves, the way they hold themselves in relation to other people. And there's a lot of drama. And if you go to the drama, you know it's about drama. You know it's a bit of political theater. And that's why it does, in fact, excite people.
Yeah, and our producer was saying that basically when for the young ones, right, people who don't know who Mahathir is, they'll be wondering, oh, why did they cut his face out, right? And then they go kepo online and who is this Mahathir and find out more about him or find out why are we where we are. So basically, yeah, it's definitely has created more buzz.
Yeah, I mean, what might otherwise have just been a picture of two elderly gentlemen with a combined age of, what, 150 or 160?
I don't think the caretaker prime minister would describe himself.
He's 65 plus 90 is 150, right?
Yeah, that's true. But right, I don't think he considers himself an elderly gentleman.
But to the young person, you know, these are two elderly gentlemen who have got no relevance at all to their own. And then suddenly, they become this mysterious, you know, person. Who is he? What does he do? Why is his face cut out? Maybe we should go and find out more.
So the question is then, what do you do with that situation? If you were those in charge of this particular bylaw and the enforcing of those bylaws, would you say, maybe we should dial back on it and instead of compounding the problem, just sort of let it rest? Because it's become such a powerful meme in this election, hasn't it?
Or are we giving Malaysians too much credit for allowing them to for affording them an imagination that might be so
I don't know what you're trying to say about your fellow Malaysians. You don't think you should give them credit for their imagination?
There are many kinds of Malaysians, all from all fabrics of society, right? Yeah, are we giving them too much this one?
This is what I think Joe is trying to get at. You know, it's very basic when it comes to theatre. And theatre is not just in urban centres where you go to, you know, high-class theatre of, you know, venues. Theatre is almost fundamental to folk culture, right? So everybody has been tutored. All cultures have a sense of the imaginary and the theatrical, and they deal with spaces and they transport you through storytelling. It's very basic. You don't have to be a sophisticated reader of semiotics, of signs, to understand this. This is, I think, why Joe says it's so powerful.
I think she's got a point. And I just wanted to be a bit naughty to get your tail up, Sherrod. But I do think she's got a point.
You get my tail up every morning you turn up here.
And for people who might know the backstory, the fact that you've got to cut out your rival's face from a billboard, it's you could read it any one of a number of ways, depending on how much you know, how little you know about the backstory.
Okay. We're coming up to the first bulletin of the morning, and taking us there is Coldplay with High Speed. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Fleet Foxes with Lorelei. I'm Sherrod Kutin. With me, Joyce Goh and Kusu Chuang. And the morning run continues. It's just 41 minutes past 6 in the morning. We're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock in the morning. Remember, you can always be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio. Or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. That's 018-789-8899. We'll come back to GE14 because it's we're going to be talking endlessly about GE14, and not just till Wednesday when it's polling there. I think for some time after that as well. Partly because the polls are going to be a barometer of where the country is going. Now, you're going to be reading headlines like this, and this comes from Malaysia Kini: signs of revolt against UMNO in MUAS Malay heartlands. And it begins with the line, in the Malay heartlands of MUA Johor, there are signs of a revolt brewing among disgruntled UMNO supporters. The question is, when you read this, What goes through your mind? Do you take at face value what you're reading by reporters in such a, on such a platform?
Well, naturally, I'll think why. That's one of the reasons. I mean, I'm reading along the lines. I mean, further down, it goes on to talk about, you know, younger people. Basically, they're looking for a change. And coming back to your question, Sharad, whether or not you believe, I mean, from the media, sometimes you read everything. And then from there, then you form your own opinion. I don't just read one story from one media platform and go, yeah, that is the gospel truth. Because, you know, you got to read a number of things and also talk to people on the ground. I believe that's very important. Not just read and then say, oh, okay, that's what it is. Yeah.
Well, I think irrespective of how the election goes, I think human beings intuitively seek out change, right? And when something has been the same, whether it's a sofa or a car or a house or, you know, what have you, even a feather duster, if you've had it for a long time, eventually you want to change it, right? And I think intuitively human beings want to have that kind of like a little bit of a nouveau-ness about their lives. And when you add the whole issue about, news flow and how everybody's now connected with their smartphones and their mobile phones and data and WhatsApps, it just kind of accelerates that whole mindset change. Whether or not this is politics, whether or not this is GE14.
Well, Chuang, you have a point, but I know people who are scared of change. There are people who don't want change, who are comfortable and they're like, I like this. This is, you know, it works. Why do you want change?
Yeah, I agree with Joyce. I mean, I think by the same token, you can say that there's quite a bit of inertia. People, like you say, Joyce, are fearful of change sometimes. They don't like the uncertainty. The devil you know
exactly.
Better than the devil
exactly.
You don't. I mean, these are expressions that suggest that, in fact, there is quite a bit of inertia. People are likely to go with what they know, right? And this, and it's true in, say, an American context, at least with politics, the power of incumbency. That's an expression that's used to describe how that incumbents have a natural advantage against those who are new to that position. Right?
Do you think it's a gross generalization to say that those afraid of change tend to be older in vintage, and those that do embrace change, those that are younger? And if that is the case, then because Malaysia is getting on in age, you know, we're now, you know, what, 61 years old as a country, independent nation. The young folk are coming through, new generations are coming through.
Do you think that's fair? I don't think that's necessarily true. I think if you remember and you cast your mind back to 2008, when nobody expected there was going to be anything substantially different in the political landscape at that polls, there was quite a bit of change. And mm-hmm. What had changed was many people who had voted for Barisan Nasional actually very quietly changed their votes. And you can talk to anybody in, say, the PJ area.
What do you think triggered that change?
Well, that's a very good question,
right? That's a good question,
yeah. And it comes out of a crisis of confidence in the leadership. There was, remember, the whole, factionalism coming out in the late 90s and that led to the creation of Reformasi and Anwar Ibrahim and all that. So, there was a feeling that something was wrong in the country.
I remember in 2008 on the night when they were counting the votes and we were checking online and we had the TV on. And what the results that were coming out on TV was very different from what was coming out online. It was not reflective. And after a while, the difference was just too big. It was just too wild. I remember my husband and I were wondering, are the results online correct? Because you can see that some states fell already, but if you watch TV, everything is still, they haven't gotten there yet. We're wondering what's going on, right? And after a while, it sunk in. And basically, you can see the morning after, everyone was a bit... It was quiet, but basically you can feel that Malaysia has matured at that time.
I was in the UK at the time, and I was getting all these messages by my mobile phone.
Disbelief.
Which was still my mobile number, my Malaysian mobile. And I was actually, what is going on? But, you talked about how Sharad, back in 2008, there was a sense of factionalism and generating the sense of distrust and distaste among Malaysians. I mean, 10 years on, do you think that it's just gotten a whole lot worse, right? So,
well, potentially, but I think there are a lot of considerations going into this election for all sides of the game, right?
But I think this election, one of the key holders are the youth. the young voters.
Many of whom did not register, many of whom registered too late to actually be on the rolls. But you know what? If you've heard a talk that you might find yourself surprisingly on that voter list, so check it out. If you didn't think you've made it, why not just still go to the Elections Commission website, put in your IC number and check whether you're in fact now eligible to vote. And that might be a surprising gift to you. Now, remember, you know, you can always be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. We'll be back with a look at many Malaysians who are overseas who wanted to vote and have been thwarted in that. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that's for what it's worth, from the 60s band Buffalo Springfield. It was a 1967 hit by a band that included such notables as Stephen Stills, Neil Young, and such. Well, brilliant stuff from a very different time.
It was a very, very interesting time in America in those days. It was all about freedom and love and anti-war protests.
Even political. As their government bombed
absolutely
the people absolutely, of Vietnam into the Stone Age, and they keep doing that. Strangely enough, these Americans.
Nothing has changed.
Yeah, the military-industrial complex needs its wars.
It's lucrative,
it?
You know, war.
War. Yeah. For some people, it is extraordinarily lucrative. Now, Chuang, you know, earlier you mentioned the fact that you were away in 2008.
Yeah.
A lot of Malaysians are away 2013. Well, the question of a lot, of course, needs to be put in sort of under some sort of scrutiny. But many of those who are away and who have wanted to vote are being thwarted in it. They feel that they're at the receiving end of either incompetence or a design to keep them from voting. Now, the question is, you know, what's the real story? And we have, of course, Bursay 2.0, that they've been weighing in on this discussion about the inability for overseas voters to get their postal votes in time in order to send them back to be counted.
Yeah, so they're saying that hundreds of overseas voters have yet to receive ballot papers. So the story was on May 6th. That was yesterday. And actually, a personal friend of mine posted on Facebook yesterday, and she said that she received her postal vote on Friday, but found out it takes 3 days to deliver to Malaysia. And on Monday happens to be a public holiday in the UK. So she's there now, and she's there for work. She works actually for the government. And plus, you know, she says, I have to find a Malaysian witness, which is not easy because, you know, you have to find someone, basically get someone to witness that. And so, in 3 days, she has to. So finally, she managed to find a fellow Malaysian who's flying back to KL on Monday. So she's passing that her vote back to this person, but so, she's just so frustrated.
So again, what does that tell you about the independence of Malaysia's institutions?
Well, this is the issue, right? And of course, one of the biggest losers coming out of G13, and this is not
a the last election.
Yeah, no, G14. Coming out of this election will be the Elections Commission, because you know Suu Hakam, the National Human Rights Commission, is already mulling the possibility of doing. You call it a study or whatever, they're going to be a report on the conduct of the Elections Commission. But in the minds of many Malaysians, there's just been so much inefficiency on the part of that institution. The question is it inefficiency by design
or
not, yes. Right? I think that, of course, is the... And whatever it is, the reputation of the Elections Commission is in shreds as a consequence of all these different types of events that happen.
Yeah, my friend who's clearly frustrated says that, you know, she doesn't understand why did they change this ruling where they could vote in the embassy, because she says that this whole postal thing is, to her, she finds it inefficient, and basically she logistically it's just tough for them to go and get that.
Well,
and to find
out, this discussion is now very relevant is because I think the basic assumption is that for those Malaysians who have left Malaysia, well, because they were disenchanted with the country in the first place, and therefore those 1 or 2 million Malaysians who exist abroad, obviously anti-establishment.
Well, you could argue that the opposite way, which is that, you know, many people who are overseas are there because they looking for job opportunities. Not necessarily they're unhappy with the government. And well, they, but the, what they want to do is to exercise their rights as Malaysians. And that's all it is.
Well,
and
exactly,
they can be
then,
voting for both sides.
And that is why the Election Commission is so reluctant to give them their right to vote. Because, or prompting or triggering the inefficiency.
But it is their right to vote. And my
of
friend
course,
in this
is.
Case,
absolutely
she works for the government. So it's like, it's just, but she's frustrated. I mean, regardless of who she's voting for, she's just frustrated because it's her right to vote and she feels like she's, it's been taken away from her.
Yeah, you know, one of the other things, because we've had some pushback from individuals like the former Deputy Home Minister who says, well, actually the numbers of overseas voters are so small. They are statistically...
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
And so they're statistically insignificant. Those who have, in fact, registered. I'm not talking about overseas Malaysians. I'm talking about those who Malaysians overseas who have registered as voters. And that's statistically unimportant. But he does seem to have missed the point. The point is, regardless of whether they're statistically important, they have a right to do so. And what these institutions ought to do is to enable that exercise.
This message came in, just came in from WhatsApp. Listener named Shanti. Her cousin just got a flight ticket and will be flying back from Australia to vote in PJ. So good on you, Shanti. Exercise your right.
Yeah, in fact, what's interesting with all these debacles or hurdles that have been seemingly thrown in front of voters, both local and overseas, is that they've come up with innovative ways to get around it. So one of the things that is happening is people say, well, you'll have no time to post your vote back, but what you can do is, I'm going home,
yeah.
I'll take your vote back for
yeah.
you.
Yeah. But, you know, if you post your vote from overseas and you arrive in Malaysia, and you know how good Post Malaysia is, right? It's
excellent.
It's diabolical.
Okay, we're going up to the next bulletin of the morning. And taking us there is Charles Bradley with Love Bug Blues. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Kusu Chuang and Joyce Goh. And the morning run continues. It's coming up to 7 minutes past seven in the morning, and it is the 7th of May. We're just 2 days away from GE14 polling day, and we're going to be giving you quite a bit of views in, and also information to help you make that crucial decision. Many of you perhaps have already made up your minds, but let us inform you nevertheless. Remember, you can be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. Now, thank you, Casey, for your WhatsApp. You say, my daughter in the UK told me that as of yesterday, she had no sight of her voting papers. Monday is a public holiday there, and even if she received them on Saturday, there's no way she can mail it back on time. So that's Casey's testament, kind of echoing what you said, Joyce, earlier.
Yeah, in my friend's case, she already has the papers, but she can't post it back in time. In Casey's case, it looks like her daughter hasn't even gotten the papers yet. I mean, what happened to them? Basically, it's just, again, signs of inefficiency.
And considering that there was a long lead-up time from the dissolution to nomination day, there was a huge, you know, I think that we had about a 2 or 3 week stretch, and so why hasn't this been, you know, in fact been expedited in the way that it should have been? Now, one of the things that we were talking about last week was research story based on some research by MIDF about unemployment, because we have near full employment in the country. But when it comes to youth unemployment or employment rates, it's something of the magnitude of 10.8%. That's youth unemployment in the country. And of that, 40% graduate unemployment, a huge contributor to the story of unemployment in the country. Also, interestingly, what was said, if you remember that MIDF research paper, that in terms of job creation, the vast majority of jobs are going to skill and semi-skill work and not the kinds of jobs that graduates could take up. So the less than 5% of jobs that are created that are actually going to this segment, which constitutes about 40% of the unemployed. Now, the question is, where do we go? How do you solve a problem like this?
Well, better education, right? Because at the end of the day, if you want to get a job, you've got to have skills that matter. And in order to get a good wage, you know, further on from that, you've got to be producing well, work that is that employers are willing to pay for. If you come out from education with from university with a degree that doesn't get you a job, whether you're getting into classical studies or literature or religious studies or I don't know, history of art or whatever. You know, there's not many museums in this country to get a job in. Well, then when they're clean, they're going to get a job, right? It's very simple.
Well, Charlie, I don't think it's just university. I think the education system in general, as in like from even standard one, like primary school, secondary school, I think we need to look at that. Because basically what we're hearing from people in the working world, in the corporate world, is that language is an issue. A lot of these people coming out to apply for jobs, they can't even string a proper sentence. They can't even speak well or even do read instructions. So I think that is a key issue.
Now, to get some insights into this phenomena, we spoke to Pei Jung-yong. She's a senior analyst at the Social Studies and Statistics Program at Penang Institute. We asked to explain the disparity between the national unemployment rate and the youth unemployment rate.
I think actually one of the main reasons when we are talking about high youth unemployment versus Malaysia's low unemployment rate, I think one of the main reasons is actually, I think, the mismatch of the labor between the supply and demand of the labor market when it comes to the youth. So the skills that are required by the market and various industries are actually not skills that are possessed by inexperienced youth, especially when it comes to fresh graduates, especially when it comes to the context of high-skilled jobs as demanded by manufacturing, engineering, and technological industries.
We also asked why there is this skills gap.
I think, in my opinion, when it comes to Malaysia's education system, in a sense, the youth are actually equipped with theoretical skills. So theoretically, they know how to work around things. They know the application of the theories. But when it comes to the practical sense, a lot of them are not able to compete with more experienced workers. So in that sense, when you think about it, the structure of the labour market is such that companies actually prefer to hire people who are experienced. So when a youth is inexperienced, then they're not able to compete with people who are more experienced as well.
Now, there's a question of whether tertiary education should be made more relevant to the market and to its needs. But others are saying it should start earlier. So we turn to Jung-yong for that.
No, I think in some sense it's basically streamlining the whole education system, isn't it? So from primary school, secondary school, and tertiary education, I think there has to be some element of soft skills training as well in that sense. We recently, Penang Institute recently did a project on youth development policy in Penang as well. And then we found that sometimes the youth are not able to present themselves very well in interviews. So that's actually one of the reasons why youth unemployment is higher and why they can't get a job, because they can't pass the interview stage. So basically, they lack the soft skills, they lack the presentable skills, and all of that plays a factor when you're talking about youth unemployment as well. So I guess in that sense, when you're talking about education, so it's a combination of improving their soft skills, improving their knowledge, and improving their practical skills as well. So it all comes together. And education is the key that ties all of this, in my opinion.
And finally, we asked Jung-yong, what are the unique challenges in creating more jobs for young people in rural Malaysia?
I think one of the more unique challenges is actually keeping the young people interested enough to stay in the rural areas. So, you know, when you are staying in a rural area, we see a lot of migration of the young people from rural areas to urban areas for jobs. So in that sense, I think the unique challenge is actually creating interest for them to remain in the rural areas. So basically, in my opinion, I think that we need to look at creating job opportunities in not only in production when it comes to agriculture and fishery. So we need to think about what is the role of the youth in the terms of distribution, processing and related services as well. So there's also been some talk about encouraging agripreneurs. So basically encouraging young people to make use of their resources in rural areas in creating business and opportunities for themselves. So in that sense, if that is something that we could actively look into, then you might be able to encourage the young people to stay in rural areas.
That was Pei Jung-yong. She's a senior analyst with the Social Studies and Statistics Program at Penang Institute. Agripreneurs. Have you heard that before? Agripreneurs.
Well, no, but it's yet another amalgamation of terms that are just unique to Malaysia.
Agricultural entrepreneurs, basically.
Technopreneur. Well, you know,
I think those, it is very interesting because there is, I think, a larger policy debate that needs to happen around food security, right? So food security, I think, is a big issue. And then, you know, and to some extent, creating a modern agricultural sector, just in terms of technology, in terms of what it could return in terms of remuneration for those who remain within the rural agricultural sector. I mean, these are, I think, very interesting challenges for Malaysia.
Well, in terms of the discussion we just had, it's not really, I mean, the issue is not food security per se, although it is very important. The issue is the education of our young people. If you don't equip them with the skills and the mindset to compete in a globalized world, well, then you're failing as an institution, aren't you? Or you're failing as a government.
Yeah, and Junior has this point about streamlining the entire education system from primary to tertiary education. So, yeah, basically making them more holistic, more in tune with what's happening to the world. Latest, it's not just the jobs, but it's also equipping them with skills such as soft skills, she's saying. Wait. And again, I think, you know, language and being able to communicate, I think that's important.
Yeah, exactly. How many universities in Malaysia now? A couple dozen, maybe three dozen, right? You can get a piece of paper from any one of those, and ostensibly with a degree that matters, whether it's in engineering or comp science or one of the new, you know, more relevant industries. But then when you come out and you've got this piece of paper with you, and then you write an application for a job, and you can't string a sentence together, right? And then you get a phone call from the prospective employer and he or she doesn't understand what you're telling him or her.
Okay,
do you know what I mean? So
yeah,
it's all
okay,
about so that as well. So the paper is just one element.
Right. The paper, in fact, and I think it's clear that the education system is a necessary but insufficient condition for employment. Because you can imagine any number of advanced nations that have a reasonably good education system still have unemployment problems. I mean, unemployment is not just a function of a dysfunctional education system. It's about the global economy. And there are, you know, upturns and downturns and where Malaysia lies in the global division of labour. I mean, all those things, it's a really complex question that cannot, and I don't think, we must leave this discussion with this idea that fix it simply by fixing the education system.
That's true. I mean, it's a global thing, but in Malaysia's case, I think what Chuan and I are saying is that there's this added thing, which is the education system. No. Globally, yes, this the whole shift, everything is happening, with what's happening, Industry 4.0 and automation coming online, AI and all that, jobs, the jobs are getting less and less, depending on where you are, what sector you're in. But aside from what's happening in the macro level, in Malaysia's case, what we're saying is that there's also the education system, which is not equipped enough.
Yeah, I mean, unemployment in Spain or Italy or any one of the ailing European nations back in the global financial crisis, I mean, youth unemployment in Spain was about 25-30% back in 2009, 2010, 2011, right? But then growth in those countries was basically non-existent. They were at minus percentage points every single year because of the frailty of its economy. In Malaysia, you don't have that. You've got avowed GDP growth of 5.5-6% on an annual basis. And why is youth unemployment so high in an economy which is growing 5.5-6%? It's unexplainable other than the fact that graduates are not equipped for the jobs. Simple as that.
Well, you know, we look to Finland, which is known for its excellent education system. Unemployment there is above 8%. But fascinating discussion and something that we should actually spend more time talking about on BFM. Just to note, we have from Lien also a WhatsApp. He says, my wife received her postal vote with the wrong name. And the Election Commission said there's nothing that can be done. She says, and now SPR, the Election Commission, can't issue new ballot papers to her as her envelope with the wrong name is nowhere to be found. Okay, so just gross levels of incompetence there. We'll be back with a deeper look at what the headlines bring you this morning. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.